You are listening to rudolfsteineraudio.com. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Genesis, the Secrets of Creation. This is Lecture 5, given on the 21st of August, 1910, entitled Light and Darkness, Yom and Layla. Readers aside, I'm pronouncing L-A-I-L-A as Layla. End of readers aside. If we look back once more at what we have learned about our Earth's beginnings, we find many things which still need to be explained. The investigations we have made so far show us that there is far more in the way of living beings to be found in the verbal descriptions of Genesis than is seen from the usual Bible translations. Yesterday we pointed out that the word Yom, in quotes, day, is not the abstract division of time, which at present we call day, but refers to the beings whom we call spirits of personality, time spirits or archai, in the hierarchical order. This discovery persuades us to enter even more deeply into what I have already said many times, namely that behind the weaving life of elemental existence described in Genesis, soul spiritual beings are to be found everywhere. Therefore, if we pursue the matter, we may discover beings instead of empty abstractions behind some of the other things we are looking at in Genesis. Of course, it is easy to see the existence of beings when we hear the spirit of the Elohim, Ruach Elohim. But if we want to arrive at the real meaning of the old records, we have to look for beings not only in those expressions, where probably even modern minds would be prepared to see them, but track them down wherever they are. So we should be justified in asking what is concealed, for instance, behind the expression, put now in my own words, quote, and the inner activity was tohu wa bohu, and darkness was upon the material existence of the elements, close quote. Do we not possibly have to see some kind of being behind what is described as, in quotes, darkness? We cannot understand Genesis at all unless we can answer such questions. Just as we have to see all the positive elements, such as light, air, water, earth, and warmth, solely as the manifestations of spiritual beings, perhaps we should also see, in the more negative expressions, solely the outer manifestation of some being hidden more deeply behind them. To get to the bottom of this, we must go back to the earliest point we can reach in the development of our planet. As we have often said, we must think of the ancient Saturn existence as a condition of pure warmth, and that with the transition to the ancient Sun existence, there then took place a densification to air and gas, and, on the other hand, a rarefaction in the direction of the etheric, to light ether. We therefore understand the passage, quote, and God, the Elohim, said, let there be light, and there was light, close quote, to be a kind of repetition of the coming of this etheric light. We may ask, was the darkness there of itself, or is there also a being hidden behind this? If you read the relevant chapter in my title outline of Esoteric Science, something will occur to you which is extremely important for the understanding of all development. The fact that at each stage of evolution, certain beings remain behind. Only a certain number of beings reach their goal. I have often used a superficial but drastic expression, and pointed out that not only do some school children worry their parents by having to remain another year in the same class, but that in the cosmic process, too, certain beings actually remain behind at a previous stage and do not attain their required level. So we may say that during the ancient Saturn evolution, certain beings did not reach their proper goal, but lagged behind. And during the ancient Sun evolution, they were still at the Saturn stage. How would one recognize, during the ancient Sun existence, beings who were still Saturn beings? By the fact that they had not reached the level of being of ancient Sun, which was of the nature of light. But because these Saturn beings were, nevertheless, there, the Sun condition, which I have described as an interweaving of light, warmth, and air, had darkness interspersed in the light. This darkness was the expression of the beings remaining at the Saturn stage, just as much as the weaving light was the expression of those beings who had reached the Sun stage in a regular way. The outer aspect showed a manifestation of the interweaving of retarded Saturn beings with Sun beings who had progressed normally. From the inner aspect, these beings moved in and out among one another, and outwardly they manifested as an interplay of light and darkness. Looking at the light, we can call it a manifestation of the beings who had progressed to the Sun stage, and looking at the darkness, we can call it the external manifestation of the beings who had remained behind at the Saturn stage. Once we realize this, we can expect to find that during the recapitulation of ancient Saturn and ancient Sun on planet Earth, the relationship between the advanced and the retarded beings will reappear. And because the retarded Saturn beings represent an earlier stage of evolution, so to speak, they will be able, during the recapitulation too, to appear sooner than the light. Thus, quite rightly, in the first verse of Genesis, we are told that the darkness prevailed over the elemental masses. This is the recapitulation of the Saturn condition. But it was the retarded Saturn condition. The other one, the Sun condition, has to wait. It comes later on, at the point where the Bible says, "Let there be light." Thus we see in a most pertinent way that with regard to these recapitulations too, Genesis gets it just right. If we really want to understand existence, we must be clear about the fact that what has emerged at a previous stage did not just persist for a while and then fade away. On the contrary, the truth is that although something new is continually arising, the older element remains alongside the new one and continues to function within it. Thus, even today, the two stages of evolution, which we can call the relationship between light and darkness, still coexist on Earth. Light, darkness, is really something that is interwoven into our existence. However, as far as present times are concerned, this is a very thorny subject indeed. I do not know whether any of you are aware that for the past 30 years or so, I have repeatedly been trying to demonstrate how very significant and valuable Goethe's title Theory of Color is. Of course, anyone who stands up for it today must be quite clear about the fact that he will not gain the ear of his contemporaries. For those whose knowledge of physics would qualify them to understand what one is talking about with regard to Goethe's color theory are far too immature to get any idea of the essence of it. Modern physics, with its fantastic nonsense about ether vibrations and so on, is utterly incapable of penetrating to the core of Goethe's color theory. For this, we shall have to wait a few more decades. Anyone who deals with the subject knows that. And the others, forgive me for saying this, who are in the occult direction, mature enough to understand the essential nature of Goethe's color theory, know far too little about physics for me to be able to go into the matter properly. So the foundation for it is still not there. For what is at the heart and core of Goethe's color theory is the mystery of the interaction of light and darkness as two polar opposite spiritual entities in the world. The fantastic notion put forward today as the theory of matter, which in the manner in which people think of it today is an illusion and has no existence at all, This concept of matter is a soul spiritual being concealed behind all the instances where the polarity of light and darkness is operating. What physicists today call the concept of matter is in fact fantasy. In the regions of space where, according to physics, we are to look for a sort of apparition called matter, in quotes, there is in fact nothing else but a certain degree of black of darkness. This dark volume of space is filled with soul spiritual being that has an affinity to something certainly mentioned in Genesis, where all these soul spiritual beings are described as darkness. And we are told that this darkness surges over elemental existence. All these things are much more profound than modern science would dream of. Thus, when Genesis speaks of darkness, it is speaking of the manifestation of the backward Saturn beings. And when it speaks of light, it is referring to the manifestation of the advanced beings. They interact and interweave with one another. We said yesterday that the main features of evolution were laid down by those beings whom we have placed at the same level as the exousiae, the spirits of form. So it is these beings who plan the overall activities of the light. And further, we have seen that they use the spirits of personality as their servants, and that behind the expression Yom, in quotes, day, we have to see a being of the rank of the Archai, one appointed by the Elohim. So we may also assume that just as these servants of the Elohim, these spirits of personality called Yom, day, are active in the positive direction, there are, as opposed to them, backward spiritual beings active in darkness. We can also say that whereas darkness is something the Elohim find already in existence, they produce light through their creative thinking. When, from what has remained of ancient existence, they think out the two complexes of thoughts, it transpires that the darkness interwoven in it is the expression of the retarded beings. They themselves contribute the light. But just as, out of the light, the Elohim appoint the beings called Yom, day, so, out of the darkness, come beings who are of the same rank as these, but beings who have lagged behind at an earlier stage. So we can say that all that manifests as darkness is a common front in opposition to the Elohim. We, therefore, have to ask, who are the beings who oppose the servants of the light, the Archai, the beings indicated by the term Yom? Who are the corresponding backward beings in opposition to them? To avoid misunderstanding, it would be a good thing if we were first to answer another question, namely, whether we have always to think of retarded beings as evil, as something wrong in the world context. An abstract person, someone who only sticks to concepts, can easily become almost indignant about the backward beings. Or he can go the other way and feel sorry for the poor things. We should not allow ourselves to have any feelings and ideas of this kind when it comes to cosmic realities of this dimension and significance. That would be quite wrong. On the contrary, we have to realize that whether beings attain their goal or whether they stop at an earlier stage of evolution, all these things happen from out of cosmic wisdom, and that whenever beings remain behind at a particular stage, it means something. It means just as much to evolution as a whole whether beings remain behind or whether they attain their goal. In other words, there are certain functions which cannot be carried out at all by the progressive beings. And for these functions, beings are needed who remain behind at an earlier stage. Their backwardness puts them in exactly the right place. We could well ask, what would become of the world if all the people who ought to be teachers of young children became university professors? those who do not become professors are much better where they are than the more learned ones would be. The university professors would probably be most unsuitable teachers for children from the ages of 6 to 10. It is the same in cosmic relationships. There are certain tasks for which those who attain their goal would be not at all fitted. For these tasks, those who have remained behind, we could equally well say those who have renounced progress, must take their place. And just as the advanced spirits of personality, the Yamim, were put in their places by the Elohim, the retarded Arkai too, those spirits of personality who manifest not through light but through darkness, are made use of so that the whole course of Earth's becoming should progress with well-ordered harmony. They are allotted their right place so that they may make their proper contribution to the regular development of our existence. How important this is, we can see from an illustration taken from everyday life. The light spoken of in Genesis is not the light we can see with our physical eyes, which is a later expression of it. Similarly, what we designate as physical darkness, which surrounds us at night when the sun is not shining, is a later physical form of what is called darkness in Genesis. If we were to ask whether the kind of physical daylight we see today has a certain significance for human beings, none of you would doubt that it has, both with regard to human beings and with regard to other creatures. Take, for example, the plants, which wither if they are removed from the light. Light is an element of life for every living thing, so it is also essential for human beings, as far as their external bodily existence is concerned. But something else is necessary apart from light. To understand what this is, we have to turn our attention to the effect the alternation between waking and sleeping has on our physical and etheric bodies. What does it really mean to be awake? What are we human beings doing when we are awake? Basically, the whole of our soul activity, all that goes on in the realms of our mental images and our feelings, all the ebb and flow of our passions, in short, all that takes place within the surging activity of our astral body and our ego, constitutes a continual wearing down of our physical body during the daytime. This is a very ancient occult truth, one which even our current physiology arrives at, if it only knows how to interpret its own findings properly. The activity taking place in our inner soul life when we are awake is continuously using up the forces of the external physical body, the first rudiments of which we acquired during ancient Saturn. The life of the physical body is quite different during sleep, when the astral body with its fluctuating inner life is outside it. Just as in waking life there is a continuous using up, we could even say destroying the forces of the physical body, in sleep these forces are constantly being restored and regenerated, so that in our physical and etheric bodies we have to distinguish two different processes at work: destructive processes taking place during waking life, and processes of renewal taking place during sleep. But nothing that happens in the world of space leads an isolated life of its own. All is connected with existence as a whole. So when we focus on the destructive processes taking place in our physical body, from the time we wake up until we go to sleep again, we must not regard them as though they occurred in isolation within the confines of our skin, but realize that they are intimately connected with cosmic processes. They are a continuation of what flows into us from outside, so that during waking life we are connected with the destructive forces of the universe, and during sleep with the forces of regeneration. this decomposition process of our physical body, going on during our waking day, could not have happened during ancient Saturn. Otherwise, the first rudiments of our physical body could not possibly have been formed. For, obviously, you cannot build up anything if you then start to destroy it. The activity on Saturn with regard to the physical body had to be a constructive one, and that was what was being taken care of on Saturn. The destructive processes in our body take place particularly in the daytime, under the influence of the light. But there was as yet no light during ancient Saturn. This is why the work of Saturn on our physical body was an upbuilding one. For a time at least, this upbuilding activity had to be maintained, even when, later on during the ancient sun existence, the light was added. And this could only happen because Saturn beings, who had remained behind, were there to take care of it. So you see how necessary it was for the Saturn beings to be kept back in cosmic evolution, so that they could undertake the rebuilding of the worn-down physical body during sleep while there was no light. The retarded Saturn beings have to be a part of our existence. Without them, we should be exposed to nothing but destruction. There has to be an alternation, an interaction, between Sun and Saturn beings, between the beings of light and the beings of darkness. Therefore, if the activity of the light beings was to be rightly guided by the Elohim, these light beings had to introduce into their work a right and proper interweaving of the work of the beings of darkness. There is no possibility of stability in cosmic activity unless the force of darkness is always being interwoven with the force of light. And this kind of network of the forces of light and of darkness is one of the mysteries of cosmic existence, of cosmic alchemy. This mystery is touched upon in the seventh scene of my first mystery play, where Johannes Thomasius enters Devakan, and where one of Maria's companions, Astrid, is given the task of weaving the dark into the light. Throughout the conversation between Maria and her three companions, you will find many cosmic mysteries concealed, which can well be pondered on for a long, long time. Thus we must never forget that we have to regard this interplay between the forces of the light of the sun and the darkness of Saturn as a necessity of our existence. When, therefore, the Elohim placed the spirits of personality as their deputies, in charge of the weaving of the light forces, of the work which is being performed upon us human beings, or upon earthly creatures altogether, under the influence of the light, they had to appoint the backward Saturn beings to be their companions. The total activity of the cosmos had to be a confluence of the interworking of the Archai, who had progressed normally, and the backward ones. These backward Archai are active in the darkness. To put it simply, the Elohim employ not only those beings called Yom, but set against them the beings who work in darkness. And the Bible gives a wonderfully realistic description of the facts when it says, quote, "And God called the light day, Yom, and the darkness he called night, Lila," close quote. Again, I'm pronouncing the word spelled L-A-I-L-A. I'm pronouncing that Lila, end of reader's aside. This is not our abstract night. These are the Saturn Archai, who at that time had not advanced to the sun stage. To this day, it is they who are active in us during sleep, when they exert their influence to build up our physical and etheric bodies. This mysterious expression, Lila, which has given rise to all kinds of myths, is neither our abstract night, nor is it anything which could lead us to think of mythology. It is simply the name of the backward Archai, of those beings who unite their work with that of the advanced Arkai. Thus we have paraphrased the respective passages in Genesis as follows. The Elohim planned the main outlines of existence and appointed to the subordinate posts the progressive Arkai, and gave them as helpers those Arkai who in resignation had remained in darkness at the Saturn stage, in order that existence could come about. So we have Yom and Lila as the two opposite groups of beings who are the helpers of the Elohim, and who are at the level of time spirits, of spirits of personality. We see existence being woven out of the spirits of form and the spirits of personality, out of advanced beings and backward beings of these two respective stages. If we have found more or less satisfying answers to what is being presented here, there is infinitely more behind all these things, another question could present itself now, which is bound to be on the tip of all your tongues. What of the other hierarchies? If we descend from the spirits of form, we come first to the Arkai, the spirits of personality, then to the archangels, archangeloi, spirits of fire. Does Genesis say nothing at all about them? Let us look more closely and find out what the actual position is with regard to these fire spirits. We know that they reached their human stage during the sun evolution. Then they progressed further through the moon stage to that of Earth. They are beings who are intimately connected with everything we can call sun nature, for it was during the sun evolution that they reached their human stage. And when, during the ancient moon evolution, it became necessary for the sun to separate from the earth, which was at that time of a moon nature, then these beings who had gone through their most important stage on the sun, and who were by their very nature associated with the sun, naturally remained united with the sun. When, therefore, the moon, later to become Earth, separated from the sun, these beings remained not with the separating Earth-Moon, but with the sun. And these are the beings who work upon the Earth chiefly from outside. I have already mentioned to you that in the evolution from Saturn to Sun, the highest form of life which could arise on the sun was the plant species. Animal nature, a species which has inner life, could arise only in conjunction with a separation. Therefore, it was not until the moon evolution that anything of an animal nature could arise. There had to be an influence from outside. We are not, in fact, told in Genesis of anything being active from without up to the end of the third day of creation. And the transition from the third to the fourth day is an important one, in that we are told that on the fourth day, light forces, beings of light, began to be active from outside. So, just as in the moon evolution, the sun shone upon the moon from outside, now both the sun and the moon shine upon the earth from outside. What we are saying is no less than that up to this point, all those forces could be active which were within the earth itself. Up to this moment in time, everything could be recapitulated which represented earlier stages, and those things which were centralized in the earth itself could arise anew. Thus we saw yesterday that the spirit of the Elohim brooding over the waters was a recapitulation of the condition of warmth, that at the moment designated by the words, quote, "let there be light," close quote, the entry of light was recapitulated. How at the point where the forces of the sound ether broke in and separated what became the upper realm from what became the lower realm, the sound ether stage was recapitulated. This was presented in the description of the so-called second day of creation. Then we saw that life ether burst in on the so-called third day of creation, and out of the earth element, out of the new condition, there came forth all that can be brought about by the life ether, the realm of sprouting green. But for anything of an animal nature to find a place on our earth, there had to be a repetition of forces working in from outside, light shining in from outside. Hence, it is absolutely in accordance with the facts that there should be no mention in Genesis of anything of an animal nature until after we have been told of forces working upon the earth from cosmic space. Up to that time, Genesis speaks only of the plant realm. All the beings included in the developing earth were at the plant stage. The animal species could only begin when the beings of the light influenced the earth from surrounding space. What came about then is described in Genesis in words of which there are innumerable translations. The English authorized version is, quote, "And God said, let them be for signs, and for seasons, and for days, and years," close quote. We have now come across a few commentators who have begun to think. But it is the fate of commentators today, where people have utter scorn for getting down to the real fundamentals, that they carry out the beginning of thinking, but cannot think through to the end. I have come across some commentators who have actually reached the point of acknowledging that the usual rendering is nonsense. I should like to meet the person who can actually make any sense of these words. What is really being said? If we want to render these words faithfully and with a real sense of the associations they would have had for the ancient Hebrew sage, and put them into a thoroughly philological translation, we should have to say that once more it is not a matter of signs, but of the activity of living beings making themselves known in the form of successive events in time. A correct translation would be, quote, "And the Elohim appointed beings to regulate the course of time for the creatures on earth, to be the regulators of particularly impressive moments, of larger and smaller periods of time, which are usually rendered as year and day." Thus a reference is made, close quote. Thus a reference is made to those beings who are one rank below the rank of the Archai, and who regulate life. The tasks performed by the time spirits, the Archai, lie a stage lower than the tasks of the Elohim. Then come the regulators, the sign fixers, for those things which have to be carried out within the Archai's sphere of activity. These beings are none other than the archangels. Thus we may venture to say that, coinciding with Genesis, telling us that not only is something taking place in the body of the earth itself, but that forces are working into it from outside, Genesis also says that at that same moment those beings make their appearance who were connected already with the sun existence, the regulating archangels, who are one stage lower than the Archai. While these Archai themselves are still active as eons, as it were, for the deployment of their forces, they make use of the archangels, the light-bearers, who act out of our earth's surroundings. In other words, the way the archangels work is that from out of cosmic space, by way of the constellations of the light beings surrounding the earth, they carry out the tremendous decrees which are actually laid down by the Archai. Those who were present at the lectures I gave in Christiania will remember that right up to today the Archai are still there behind what we are accustomed to calling the spirit of the age. If we look around at the way our world affairs are organized, we shall find that at any given time there are a number of nations. You will be able to say of these national groups that for a specific period an all-encompassing time spirit rules, while side by side with this spirit, beings subordinate to him rule the several folk spirits. Just as today the spirits of the age are in control, and behind them are the Archai, I described this in my Christiania lectures, So behind the folk spirits are the archangels. In a certain way, they are the folk spirits. Genesis actually points to the fact that even in times when man was actually not yet there, these spiritual beings were the organizing powers. So we must say that it was the Elohim who brought light into existence. They manifested themselves through the light. But for the lesser activities within the light, they appointed the Archai, indicated by the word Yom, and who rank next below them among the hierarchies. And beside them they placed the beings who must of necessity be woven into the web of existence, so that, as well as the activity of the light, there could also be the activity of darkness, which goes with it. Beside Yom, they put Lila, which is usually translated as night. There, then, had to be further progress, further specialization in evolution, and for this, other beings had to be taken from the ranks of the hierarchies. So, when we say that the Elohim, or spirits of form, manifested themselves through the light and placed the affairs of light and darkness in the charge of the Archai, we have to continue by saying that the Elohim now took another step and, specializing further, appointed the archangels to the task of not only calling to life plant nature, which is presented as an outer manifestation, but of now calling forth inner life, which is a reflection of outer existence. They entrusted to the archangels the activity which has to stream down upon our earth from outside, so that not only can the plant species burst forth, but also the animal species, with its inwardly active life of mental image and sensation, can arise. Thus we see, if we know how to interpret these things correctly, that Genesis points clearly to the archangels. If you think about what the usual run of commentators say, you will always feel dissatisfied. But if you turn for help to the same source from which Genesis arose, esoteric science, you will be able to throw light on whichever part you are looking at. It will all appear to you in a new light. And this ancient document, which because of the impossibility of translating the living words of old into our own language, would otherwise inevitably remain incomprehensible, will endure as a document which speaks to humankind for all time. The end of Lecture 5.